Welcome to the Launch University Podcast, turning good intentions into reality in your career, business, and life. Here's your host, Jeff Henderson.
Welcome to Launch University. My name's Jeff Henderson, and let me start out by telling you who the hero of this podcast is. The hero is you. The fact that you clicked on this podcast and are listening to something called Launch University says something about you. We believe it says you're a launcher. Now, what's a launcher? Well, a launcher is someone who has ideas, intentions, and dreams. This could be for a business, a new organization, an existing organization, or it could be something personal. You're going to launch a new fitness plan, a new financial goal, a relationship, a family, a new habit. You're a launcher, and that's fantastic. But what we also know about launchers is that we all need help. It's not enough to have an idea or good intention about your career, your business, or personal life. The goal is to take that idea and good intention and turn it into reality and sustain it. That's the goal. And it can be a lot of hard work doing that, which is the reason we created this podcast. About a year ago, my friends David Farmer, Shane Benson, Kevin Jennings, all launchers themselves, by the way, we started talking about how to take the conversations we were having and conversations with other launchers and send them out to help you. You see, for 20 years now, David and Shane and I have been meeting on a regular basis to share ideas and to hold each other accountable to turn these ideas into reality. And along the way, we have met some incredible launchers, which is how we met Kevin Jennings. And we were having so many great conversations with so many great people that we began to feel a stewardship responsibility to share what we were learning with other people, which is the result of that is this podcast. So our desire is to help you, and remember, you're the hero of this podcast, to launch your idea and your good intentions. And the problem that we're trying to solve is that there are so many great ideas and good intentions that never see the light of day. So many great ideas and good intentions that are bottled up in people. And if we can help launch those great ideas and good intentions into the world, we believe we can help make the world a better place. That's the win for us. But we are just the guide. You are the hero, and this podcast and this blog are tools that we're going to use to help you launch. For example, in today's podcast, you're going to not only learn but be inspired by one of our favorite launchers, Aaron Eddie Erickson. Today, you're going to hear the amazing story of the movement she started called So Worth Loving, and one of the principles I want you to learn from is something we talk about all the time with other launchers, and it's this. Do not despise the days of humble beginnings. Do not despise the days of humble beginnings. You see, Aaron started spray painting t-shirts, not knowing that it would lead to all of what she is doing now with So Worth Loving. And as you hear from Aaron, we hope and we pray this inspires you, especially if you're in the early days of an idea. And remember, you're the hero of Launch University, and we believe today's podcast will help you take your great idea and good intentions and eventually turn it into reality and sustain it and help make the world a better place. And to help that, here's Aaron. Aaron Eddie is in the house.
Woo!
Hey, we just discovered, by the way, Kevin Jennings is in the house as well. So good to see you, Kevin.
Hey, happy to be here, everybody.
And I just discovered that you're a Habersham County native in Georgia, and so am I.
Yep. Only good people come from Habersham.
So you're from Clarksville. I'm from Cornelia, and Kevin is not. So.
Yeah.
What does it say about me?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Have you ever been to Habersham?
Don't know where it is.
Okay.
Missing out.
But that's okay. You go to school me.
Northeast Georgia Mountains, right?
Best place to
yeah,
be.
Yeah, so that's cool. Well, Aaron, we're thrilled that you're here. And for our listeners, let's just dive in if that's okay. I know Kevin's got a million questions. But for our listeners that don't know your story, and particularly are not familiar with So Worth Loving, just tell us the story, because it's a fascinating story, you know, in so many respects, but particularly for the entrepreneur or the entrepreneur that has a dream and they wonder, where do I start?
Yeah.
And sometimes just a small step will lead to big things, which is really your story. So tell us the So Worth Loving story.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, thanks for having me. So
absolutely.
To be here.
Yeah.
before I started So Worth Loving, I went to high school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I thought maybe I wanted to be an image consultant, but I didn't know. Didn't go to college. I had a 4-year scholarship at Brenau University in Gainesville.
Wow, wow.
But I did not choose
Thank
to
you,
take
but no
that.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I know my parents loved that. And they're like, oh, what is our daughter doing with her life? And I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I decided I'd just work with them. I worked with them for, I guess, 2 years out of high school. And they manufacture furniture. So my parents have manufactured furniture for 30 years, my grandma's 40 years. Mm. So I kind of came from this, seeing my parents work together and work on their dream. So I decided I'll work with them for a while. And then there was an organization called Orange that I really wanted to pursue to work at. So I pursued them. I begged them. Then they finally said yes. And I did like all like the boring things that some like a creative may think is boring, like data cards and spreadsheets and figuring out how to work a spreadsheet and all in between. And then they started trusting me a little bit by bit by bit. Mm. And they started giving me more projects that I got really excited about. Well, in the meantime, I had started a few other projects at night because I guess, I don't know, I just wanted to. So I started a company called Cupcakes for a Cause, where I baked cupcakes and gave the money to causes. And then I would make felt animals and I would adopt them on a blog, which is so weird. I know it. It's as weird as it sounds.
I love that idea.
Elaborate on how that works.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think about
Kevin wants to adopt one.
I'm saying where does the money go? Like, I would love to know how I can adopt a felt animal. Well,
so adopt a felt was adoptmyfelt.com was the name of the website. I think I still have it. And I make...
Our listeners are going to it right now, so...
And I would make little cute felt craft animals from Martha Stewart's kits, from Michael's. And I would make them. They'd sit on my shelf. And then I didn't want to give them to Goodwill because I would hate to do that because they were so cute. So I decided, what if I just adopted them out to people? So I put up an adoption form and people adopted my felt.
Wow.
Well, you know, there's the Cabbage Patch doll in Cleveland, which is not too far from
Same
Habersham,
concept,
by the way.
Just smaller.
Wow.
So how long did that go on?
Oh, not long at all. Okay. It was like, I just did fun little tiny, quirky, really weird projects for fun. Like, it was just like an outlet, I guess. Yeah. And so then when Orange started trusting me to just do, you know, more marketing type things and video production and things like that, I probably let go of those other little weird projects. But in the midst, too, though, I was also doing music. So I was singing. I had a few EPs. I had a few YouTube videos, and I would license my music to commercials and television shows. So I was doing that, and I thought, ultimately, I thought that was my dream. That was my goal, was to solely do music maybe one day, once I started feeling okay about dreaming. And it was Reggie Joyner that asked me, you know, sky's the limit. What do you want to do? And I thought, well, work here? Like, I don't know. Like, that's my dream, you know? Because I thought it was a trick question. And no one had ever asked me that question before. And so I thought, I think it's music. I think I want to pursue music. So I started pursuing it really heavily. And then I had a music video that went viral. And I thought, well, what if I created something for my fans that they could identify with? Because it meant so much to me that they thought my music was even shareable, like that they would want to share it and more people would want to support it. And so I thought, I'm going to create fan merch, like a t-shirt that they can make their own. That's not my face or my name, but something for them, something for my fans and my community that listens to my music. Because a lot of my music was uplifting and empowering. And I wanted my songs to always be the song when you have a really bad day that you put it on. So I decided, oh, you know, I'm going to just duct tape some cardboard stencils that say So Worth Loving. So Worth Loving just came to my mind, that phrase. I came up with a few, like, you're enough, you are worthy of love, all these different phrases, but So Worth Loving, I felt like it was, I don't know, it just seemed, like, common, but it's an uncommon phrase, but you're kind of familiar with it. And so I duct taped cardboard stencils, fabric spray paint, put it on my own t-shirts, spray painted it. Then I offered to do that for my friends, their friends. And then I put my home address on my blog. and it was very safe to do that. My dad, if he knew, he would have killed me. He would have figured out how to get that address off. And I put my home address on there, and I said, anybody that wants a t-shirt spray painted, mail me yours. I'll spray paint it, and I'll mail it back. And I thought that I had probably like 5 readers on my blog, while my music, like on YouTube and other areas, were pretty active. Like, it's like, no one's really reading my blog. This will be a fun little, like, fun little, another passion project that I just love on my community and the people that, you know, follow along with my life. And then that's it. Well, then 100 shirts later, receiving them in my mailbox, my finger was so sore spray painting this, because I'm like, just like spray painting it. And my,
so they just send you the shirt. You have to obviously mail it back to them, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And sometimes people would send like $5 or $10 for shipping. Like, they would just include it. Like, I didn't request that.
Did you include a felt animal?
No, I didn't. You didn't.
It was just a t-shirt. Okay.
Just a t-shirt, not a felt animal, okay. Unfortunately.
That's amazing. 100 people said, hey, I'm in.
And so, that's what spoke volumes, because I hate mailing things. Like, mm-hmm. honestly, like, I hate, now I have to love it, right? But then it was, I just didn't enjoy mailing, because you have to, there's so much footwork. Packing it up, putting a label on mm-hmm. it, shipping mm-hmm. it out. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty powerful, that all these people are mailing me their t-shirts that are, some are vintage. Like, some are like, this was my favorite hoodie. And there's so much pressure. And like, what if I mess up?
Mess it up, right?
I cannot buy them a new vintage t-shirt that's their favorite. And so I did that for 6 to 8 months. And prior to the 6 to 8 months, I was getting the itch of like, I'm really passionate about this. I'm thinking about it more than I'm thinking about my job. What does this mean? This isn't even like sustainable. So how do I transition? You know, those types of thoughts that you just naturally go through. Mm-hmm. And I decided, you know, after people were telling me, I just want to buy a shirt. Like, I don't want to go through the footwork of sending it and you spray painting it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my husband would come home and I would have like 20 and 30 shirts just like strung along the living room with like cardboard shoved in them that I made from the garage, and fabric spray paint, you know, and towels everywhere so I don't get it on my shagged carpet in our apartment. And he's just like, what is happening? Aaron, this isn't sustainable. You keep like buying spray paint and buying cardboard stencils. And so I decided, okay, I'll do one t-shirt. So this was still like just a fun project. So I'll do one shirt and I'll just sell it through my blog or something. And then I launched it on Cyber Monday after Thanksgiving. And that was when...
What year was that?
That was 2011, okay. November 2011. Okay. So Worth Loving started March of 2011 as just me spray painting. Mm-hmm. And then I waited from there till the end of December. And that's when I quit my job, was in December, to pursue it after we created a website and a t-shirt.
Okay, so tell me about Cyber Monday.
That was my question.
Yeah. Oh, no, it was not. That was my follow-up question.
I'm glad you, I'm glad you asked it. No, please, because I think we're on the same mindset. Go for it.
Well, we're live. What's going to happen? Yes. So what did happen, and how did you feel emotionally? I'm sure you're excited, you're nervous. So just take us back to that day.
Yeah.
That was Kevin's question.
I love it. Yeah, that was a crazy, because in August, I still didn't think I was going to be doing a t-shirt. So it happened really fast, where I reached out to one of my friends, Phil Sanders, and I said, hey, I would love to pay you to shoot some product that I think I'm going to be creating. And he was like, absolutely. And him and his wife modeled it. He shot it. They all did it for free just to like support me. And so, because we had all no clue what we were doing and what to expect. I think what I loved the most about even that relationship with Phil and Anna was that they treated the project and the idea like it was going to soar and take off. And I think when you're terrified to do anything, to put yourself out there, to have somebody like that around you to just be like, this is going to be awesome. We're for you. This is going to be amazing. And then we launch it. And, you know, you think, you're just waiting for every order. I know every person's name. You know, like,
it's a big world out there.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just, like, looking at all the orders. And, you know, it was a big day. I didn't really know what to expect. I think I had a realistic gauge by the amount of shirts that I was receiving. So I felt like it's going to be something around that. But what was really neat, that there were people that supported my music that were buying this shirt, and people that I didn't know. I thought it was going to be all my family and friends, and that was it. And it was people I did not know at all that were buying our shirts.
And how did that, like, who are those people? Was your tribe telling them?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so it was mainly through my music that I think that, because I was already living a semi-public life, I guess, on social media through music. So I talked to the internets as if they were my family. That's what I did. Yeah. And that's what we still do. If the ones that don't want to be in my family, that's okay. I got a family over here.
That's awesome. And so what, how many did you sell that day? You remember?
I think I sold 50. Mm-hmm. I think I sold 50 shirts. I remember when I ordered the shirts from Danger Press, is who we print from now. When I ordered them, I ordered like 5 smalls, 10 mediums, like really small quantities, because I also didn't have the finance to buy shirts. So some of it was pre-order and I just didn't tell people. I was like, okay, now I need to get the shirts printed real quick.
Well, and that's but in your business. Okay. You know, how many are we going to order here? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, in the church, when you launch a church, how many people are going to come? I don't know.
One person,
right?
At
that's
least.
Right. Well, I think my family's going to be here.
Yeah.
So, but there's day one. What about day two?
Yes. Day two was kind of the steam kind of rolled off, and you know, it was Cyber Monday, and then there was like another probably sale after Cyber Monday that happens. So everybody, like, all of a sudden their attention was on that, and day two was really pretty silent. Pretty much everybody that was going to support was on day one. And then there are a few trickled in. Where momentum picked back up was when everybody got their shirts. And then and I made sure to take such good care of every order that I packed, that those people that received it, they were going to be the beginning. And at the time, I didn't think that way. But looking back, I'm like, they were the beginning. They were the people that I needed to listen to the most, love on the most. Because they're supporting me. And it was probably, so 7 days after was a good, because everybody received their order. But day two was real rough.
Well, there's the big, you know, the big emotional high of, you know, in the restaurant business.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you cut the ribbon, and then there's the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And it's just continuing to build that passion, maintain that passion.
Yeah, exactly.
And you got a million questions, I'm hogging all the time.
But here's the thing. You're asking really great questions.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, you're doing a fantastic job, Jeff. And so I don't want to interrupt the flow. If anything, I have so many questions, but really about, you kind of alluded to it, and he's like, hey, I wasn't thinking that way before, but I think that way now. And so a big part of it for me is when launchers are kind of in the moment, they're using different motivations, they don't see it as the way they see it on the other side. So one thing you mentioned about, talk about tribe, talk about community, and I know for me, those weren't words I use when I first got started on anything, but because you were a musician and you had a fan base, maybe you saw it that way. So can you just kind of walk us through, like, when, how, and when did you kind of have that realization? Okay, this is not just, when you start using the word community, when did it dawn on you that there was a connective tissue amongst the people who were involved, and you weren't just serving someone who wanted a cool shirt?
Yes, that's a really great question. I started seeing community in So Worth Loving when I started receiving stories. Mm-hmm. So when people first heard of this phrase, So Worth Loving, people were emailing me their story of why they struggled with self-worth. And I thought, I mean, it was like story upon story upon story. And the common theme and the common thread was that they all felt alone. And I'm thinking, there are hundreds of emails in my inbox of people feeling alone. But if they all knew each other, they wouldn't feel alone. Like, if they all had these conversations, they wouldn't feel alone, and they would feel like maybe there was a light at the end of the tunnel, or they had the strength to seek help, you know? And so from there, I thought, well, we're going to talk about it, because it's very common to not talk about the struggles of self-worth. Mm-hmm. And that was an identifier for me, was we're going to talk about it. We're going to be the blog that talks about it, this t-shirt company that talks about it. And so with people's permission, I asked, hey, will you share your story on our blog? We can be anonymous. You can have your name on it. And so that was really neat, because when I started doing that, people started you know, posting my, I shared my story with their family and their friends. So multiple people are sharing their story on our blog, but sharing it with their community. And so it just became community, like from the beginning, really. I started using that word. I started using family more so than community because it was, we were talking about such nitty gritty things. And I wanted people to feel safe. I wanted to try to create a safe place for them. So it was really cool to see that spiral. I think that's why people started spreading the word so quickly, because their story was being shared on another platform.
And there's another side of that, that so there, you build a community, but to have a thriving business, you actually have to sell something.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of mission, you're a mission-minded organization. There are a lot of great mission-minded organizations that never sell anything and they get stuck.
Yeah.
There are a lot of organizations that sell a lot, but they don't create a tribe. Yeah. You've been able to do both. So how have you built the tribe but then said, buy this shirt, go here? What's the balance there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it was the, there are so many examples of people wearing our product and having a conversation because of it with somebody else. And then therefore saw either a life change or somebody be inspired to think about the way they view themselves. So we view apparel as an entryway to talking about the struggles of self-worth. And that's kind of just been since the beginning. And so I think, you know, in order for us to grow and spread our message, we use it through products, and our whole family knows about that. Like the whole community online, they know that when they wear this shirt, it means something to them, but it also may impact the person that comes in the elevator that they've never met before, or the woman that's walking through the mall, or like, tell me about that shirt. Like, I can't tell you how many people have emailed us and said, I Googled So Worth Loving because I saw someone wearing it at the mall.
That's fantastic.
And that's how they found us. Isn't that awesome?
That's fantastic.
So I think we've just used apparel as like a, it must exist for us to grow our message.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, this is so good. I really want to apologize already because I have so many questions. and they're not going to be linearly at all. I'm not going to have any kind of linear approach to this. Because there's something you said earlier about not going to college, right? Mm-hmm. Having a four-year scholarship, not going. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, symbolically, I keep hearing, wow, what does it mean to really stare down two paths and say, I see a productive, easy, not easy, but safe route to my success. And then I see one that is full of ambiguity.
Yeah.
And just to say, I'm going to take that. Now, obviously, I think, you know, I'm picking up some of just your personality. That you're like, hey, that didn't feel like a risk to me at the time. I felt like I would go to college maybe.
Yeah.
But then I see that later, and I'm listening to you talk about, hey, I had, you know, there was like, you were always, I think, quick to jump on a passion project, as you would call them. And so to me, if you don't mind just kind of unpacking, like, what was going through your mind then, and maybe what goes through your mind now? Because I think that whether you're an entrepreneur, you have to be comfortable figuring it out.
Yeah.
And I think you've been doing that since 18 years old. And like that, I think, is a skill that people have to be comfortable with to kind of live in uncertainty all the time can really drive people nuts.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, and you talked before the interview about how you had a job where you had a boss that was structured and you appreciated it. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of this interesting kind of story. So you can just unpack that a little bit and say, hey, okay, well, how do you approach uncertainty at that point, obviously, and how do you approach it now?
Yeah.
Now that you kind of rely on So Worth Loving to help take care of you and your family.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really great question. I'm glad you asked that. For me, I think it started when I started pursuing music. Because you go on the stage and you're so uncertain about the people's response to what you're about to do. And so I think I faced that when I was 15 and then 16 and then 17. And when I went to a producer and I said, I want to create an album, but I want it to be all cover songs. And he was like, why? And in my mind, I'm like, well, because people will definitely like it if they like that song. And they don't, you know, if you don't like it, it's not my fault because I didn't write it.
Right, right.
And so he challenged me. He's like, I think you should try to write. I'm like, I've never written before. Like, I was always doing poetry and things like that, but like, I've never written songs and melodies and everything that it takes to write something and record it. And it was it was being extremely vulnerable in front of a producer and another songwriter that's really great at it. and singing it in front of a microphone and the uncertainty of if they're going to like it. Mm-hmm. I just got so comfortable with that, even though it's very uncomfortable. But I knew it was good for me because I saw the results, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I think to your question with starting these projects, I just didn't get too caught up in what other people thought because, I don't know, I saw that I could grow from whatever it is that I'm throwing myself into. So that to me was a better situation than being held back because of what someone thought. Does that make sense?
It does. And I'd like to give a shout out to your parents, by the way, because to Kevin's point, for them to go, oh, so you're not going to go to a, yeah. not just go to college, but it's paid for.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about that conversation?
Oh, yes. My parents, you know, my dad has been such a, he always would be like, freedom of expression. Like I gauged my ears one time and he was like, I mean, he would have thought my mom was like not having it. Like she was not having it. My dad was like, freedom of expression. I wouldn't do that. But if that's how you want to express creativity, then do it. So they always had this balance of keeping me in line, but then also letting me like explore and be adventurous. And, you know, I just said, I've been praying about this. I really feel strong about this. I'm just not going to accept the scholarship. And there was more heat from my sisters than there was with my parents. Because I think they saw us all individually and they knew, like, I was never good at school. Like, they knew it. Like, I mean, I repeated fifth grade. They were like, and when they broke the news to me, they thought I was going to be crushed. And I was like, sweet, I'm going to be the smartest kid in class.
Like, I love it.
Like, that was my response. And they were like, oh, that went a lot easier than we expected.
That is so good.
So I think that they just knew that, like, school really wasn't for me anyway.
It's interesting to hear that perspective when you got a 4-year scholarship. There goes the irony of it. Like, I wasn't that good at school, clearly according to your standards. But the school is like, nope, 4-year scholarship. Come on. Yeah.
Something happened.
Yeah, for sure. But one thing I think that I just want to stop for 1 second, make sure the listeners don't miss out on a couple of things. Because what you're telling me is, hey, Kevin, if you're willing to take opportunities, small ones, to be uncomfortable and see the opportunity to grow and say, I can learn to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I can learn if I go in and practice keeping myself in a mindset of growth, mm-hmm. then when I need it the most, I can pull on it later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's one thing to say, well, I want to sing. Well, now I'm on YouTube. Now my song went viral. Now I'm fans on t-shirts too. Now mm-hmm. they're all responding. Now I have a business. So there's like, I didn't go from never taking a risk ever in my life.
Right.
To betting on an idea mm-hmm. and putting myself at risk. Yeah. It was, hey, I learned how to not just navigate risk from a financial standpoint, but really even personally. Like, yeah. how do I do it in a way that makes me allows me to thrive? And so I think that if you're listening, I really want you to say, hey, how can I learn today to take a small risk that can allow me to be uncomfortable right now? And so I can build on it and start that process, because I can clearly tell that because your family got to see you take risks early, by the time Source Loving came around, they understood how to support you. Mm-hmm. You know, your husband knew how to stand behind you because they all got to go through that journey with you. And mm-hmm. so I think a lot of people, when they have that dream, they see it as an all or nothing opportunity. And I think that's a fallacy, mm-hmm. For sure. And I think you're a really great story to say, hey, you know what? You can start with something small. And another thing that hit me really hard, I'm really sure if listeners don't forget, because I think there's so many lessons here that I'm nervous that the story's so good they'll miss it. Mm-hmm. And that is, when you talked about the side projects and passion projects, you know, we can all laugh about, you know, adopt a felt, but that probably let you stay in those jobs a lot longer.
Absolutely.
Because you had a creative outlet. You didn't have to worry about the day job fulfilling you 100% because you said, this is great. I'm going to learn how to do these spreadsheets. I'm going to learn how to ever, you know, serve well and lead well. And I'm going to go and do this passion project on the side that fills me up so I can come back and deliver this again tomorrow without pulling my hair out as a creative. And so I think there's another lesson. I think you have to say, hey, you know, if you're not there yet, if you don't even know what the dream is yet, there's something you can take from Aaron for sure, and that, you know, if you have something that you enjoy doing and it just makes you happy, like that's it. Like, no money in sight, but it doesn't have to monopolize all your time, monopolize all your money. Just, I like this, therefore I will do it. Mm-hmm. I think there's something really powerful about that as well, because it unlocked the opportunity to even discover So Worth Loving. That came out of you exploring your passions on a regular basis, and this is what happens. So I think you have, I mean, the idea comes, sometimes comes to you if you're willing just to explore the ideas you have on a daily basis. You probably ignore and say, oh, stupid idea, move on. No.
Yeah, all of that's connected.
All of it, yeah. For sure. So
and that's the great thing, I think, too, about checking more than one career box is that you're learning from here, you're learning from here. You actually get better as you go in all those different areas. And I think we're officially in the bonus section of the podcast. Which is great. So
I love it.
No additional charge for this, listeners. maybe a couple more questions, and then we're going to be actually back with our next podcast with Erin, talking about another area that she's fantastic in. But before we get there, you just opened your first retail space, right?
That's
so
right.
Tell us about that. What is the difference in the requirements as a leader from being an online business to being now online and retail?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, we do. We have a retail store and it's pretty exciting. My parents, you know, they had retail stores. So I kind of knew a little bit of what I was getting myself into in some respect. But we signed the lease to our space last June and we were supposed to be moving into it in September. But building permits took too long. And I didn't know that they were going to take too long. I guess that goes within, you know, predictability and unpredictability. So we actually moved out of our old office space into my house to save money for first month's rent and security deposit. And I thought, we'll be here for like 2 months. You know, it's not ideal, but we can make it work. And my poor team is in my house fulfilling orders. And it takes way longer. And we move into our new space in January. So we were in my house for a very long time, but in the midst of me being in my house actually got sold. So our landlord sold it and didn't tell us. So we had 30 days to move out. So we were not only homeless office-wise, we were homeless personally.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, figured out what to do, how to, like, we managed it well and found a house and figured out a temporary space. And so you can imagine when we moved into this space, the first day of moving, our team was so ecstatic. And they went through the trenches with me in that whole process because there were a lot of really, like, very non-glamorous things that you probably don't see online that, you know, I don't know, you just don't see it online. There's all the nitty-gritty that every company has. So move in, and our retail store opens in April. And what was really cool, the first day of our launch party, I had this guy named Kurt Ron. He's always been a supporter. He comes to all of our events and he's been a great mentor, and I've asked him lots of advice on business, and he stops in and he gives me a necklace that he bought when we first opened our online store. He said, "This necklace I've kept and I can't think of anybody to give it back to than you."
Wow.
On your first day of opening your physical store.
How cool
is that? Wow.
Yeah.
And it was so, I cried.
Yeah,
it was so great.
I'm a crier, so we keep going down this path. yeah. If Jeff wasn't here, I'd probably cry a little faster.
Well, I'm
going to
be a crier as well.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
You're in good company then, because me too. So it was a really cool moment. So now what's been neat, we get to connect with people physically. Mm-hmm. Like, we've been online for so long. It's a digital interaction, unless we do pop-ups where we get to hug people and meet them face to face. And so people come out of town to visit our store. Like, we just had like 2 people, one from Virginia and one from Maryland, that came through.
That's amazing.
And they just stopped in.
Tell us where it is. Tell our listeners where your retail location is.
Our store is in East Atlanta Village. So it's just outside of Little Five Points, if you're familiar with Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fun. So the front portion is our retail, and then the back portion is all of our fulfillment offices. And we did that strategically because I didn't know how well retail was going to do because we've been online for so long. So I thought, well, I mean, we need fulfillment anyways. So to help financially with rent and everything, this wouldn't make a difference. There's no overhead really, other than, you know, the other products that we carry, because we carry a few other like-minded brands that do some really cool things for their own communities. And so like Giving Keys and Seiko and Tom's and Crochet Kids are a few that we carry in our store, but it's only 500 square feet, so it's small, and then the rest is the offices.
Mm. And that's where you go to every day now, right?
Yeah, that's where I go every day.
Wow.
It's awesome. 2,300 square feet. We went from 10 by 10 space. Well, we went from a water heater closet to 10 by 10 space to 400 square feet to 2,300 square feet. It's awesome. So fun. We can spread out a little bit.
That's so great.
For the sake of our listeners, and we're going to respect the fact that we want you to grow on the go. And so the last thing I want to do is make this go longer than it's supposed to. I will probably have to do more talking to Aaron. And what I'll do, I promise, if I do have another conversation, I will share whatever I learn with all of you. That's my promise.
Okay. Well, here's the thing I would love for you to do. It would be a big encouragement, I think, to Aaron. If you've enjoyed her conversation, which I know you have, I would go and buy a t-shirt today. Like Kevin's going to buy five. And so, soworthloving.com, and you should just go and support them, and it's gonna be great. And so here's what we're gonna do though for our next podcast, the transition. Erin's gonna talk about social media. She's fantastic. She actually helps us at our church, Gwinnett Church, and we're gonna just kind of unpack some of the, because she created an online community. Everybody's trying to do that, but she knows how to do that better than most. So, Aaron, hey, thanks for sticking around for our second podcast.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
As a fellow Habersham person, I'm very proud of you.
Yes.
So, Kevin, thanks. And we'll see you guys. Thanks for, what do they need to do? They need to subscribe to the podcast. What do they need to do?
You need to do a lot of things. I mean, they say
we have only, no t-shirts.
They say only have one call to action, and I'm a marketer, and I'm breaking every one of these rules, right? Okay. We're going to say, visit soworthloving.com, buy
that's
a t-shirt,
right.
Go to launchuniversity.com, you know, subscribe to the podcast, join the email list. Sincerely, we want to connect with you. We're new, obviously. We're just out the gate with all of this. But we really want to be able to serve you with great conversations and information that can help you take that next step with whatever you're trying to launch. And so we'd love to connect. And so whatever way you need to do it, whatever way comfortable for you, make that step. But start going. You know, find us on social media. Search us. We want to connect. And stay tuned for the next podcast episode.
Yeah, subscribe and buy a t-shirt.
That's
so
great.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time here at Launching. So here's an action item coming out of our first interview with Aaron. I would love for you to write down one lesson and share it on your social media platform. And as you do that, if you could tag Aaron on your social media platform, it would be a great way to encourage her and to say thanks for the insights that she gave. And remember, our principle for today is do not despise the days of humble beginnings. So if you could do that, write down one lesson and share it on social media and tag Aaron, I would really appreciate it. Now, before we let you go, please remember a couple of things. In these early days, we're trying to reach as many launchers as possible. So you can help us do that by subscribing to the podcast, leave a review, talk back to us, and we'll talk back to you, and share the link with your community. Now, don't miss our next episode with Aaron as we talk about social media and what we can learn from her about how to build a community online like she has done with So Worth Loving. Well, on behalf of Kevin Jennings, Shane Benson, and David Farmer, thanks for being a part of these early days of Launch University, and we look forward to helping you next time take your good intentions and good ideas, turn them into reality, sustain them, and help make the world a better place.
Thanks for listening to the Launch University podcast. We hope it's helped move you from go-getter to difference maker. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. Find more great resources at launchu.net.